We're now joined by the KYMN National Security Specialist for your national your KYMN National Security Update. Good morning, John Olson. How are you, sir?
Good morning. Good morning.
Thank you for doing this. We are good. This is going to now be a weekly segment every Wednesday morning, and I'm super excited about this.
Well, I'm happy to join you. It's not quite the hour long show that we used to do.
No.
National Security This Week, but it's at least an opportunity for us to talk once a week about what's happening around the world.
I think so. I think it's a really good thing. So, as you were sort of walking out the door last week, I said to you, next time we talk, I just want to say to you, Canada, go. and so that's sort of what I want to talk about today. I mean, Canada, suddenly in the last 2.5 months, the United States relationship with Canada has fallen not just to an all-time low, but it's plummeted. It's almost unexplainable. Can you just sort of give us a pretty good overview of what the hell is happening with Canada right now?
Well, I mean, look, Canada has been one of our oldest and closest allies for a very, very long time, right? And one of our most important trading partners because they're right on our border, just like Mexico is. I think if you look at U.S. military operations around the world, certainly anything that's linked to NATO, Canadians have been there right there with us. I mean, there've been, I don't know, something like 175,000 Canadian military personnel who've served in peacekeeping operations alone, alone all the other things that they've done to support us. I mean, Canadian Air Force jets were right there with us right after 9/11, flying combat air patrols to protect the United States.
Yep.
So, I mean, they're a great ally. They're a tremendous trading partner. The tariff war that has been started by our administration certainly has not helped our peaceful relations with our neighbors. So I grew up playing hockey, as you mentioned last week,
yep.
and I've played against the Canadian Royal Military Academy when I was playing hockey at Annapolis. And when we're out on the ice against each other, we'll pound the crap out of each other to try and achieve.
Right.
But off the ice, believe it or not, best of friends, no matter what.
Yeah.
So when you hear the new Canadian prime minister saying that, you know, Canada loves America, but they're ready to drop the gloves if necessary, that should tell you something.
Yeah.
That should tell you something.
Yeah. The president keeps referring to Canada as the 51st state. And
yeah.
it's a little bit of saber rattling because he even tweeted, I think last week, that Canada being annexed by the United States is inevitable. What on earth is he talking about?
Yeah, I honestly am not sure where President Trump is going with that. I mean, look, Canada is a huge nation, right?
Yep.
They have 40 million people, so roughly the same population as California. The high Canadian north, the province of Nunavut, there are like, I don't know, 19,000 people who live in Nunavut, but that's way up in the Arctic Circle.
Mm-hmm.
And that territory alone is the same size as space as Mexico. So I mean, it's a huge area, right?
Right.
So most of the people live within probably 100-150 miles of the U.S. border.
Mm-hmm.
That's all of their biggest cities are all along that border line with the United States of America. And that's why there's so much trade that goes back and forth between the U.S. and Canada. And Canadian pipelines run down into the United States, and Canadian mining supplies American manufacturing and a whole bunch of other things. So I'm not sure what Trump's desired end game here is, but he's certainly, angered the people of Canada with this rhetoric. And that's not a good thing to do when you need your friends in the world against, autocracies, rising autocratic powers.
If we were to I don't even know how to ask this question because it sounds so stupid. If international relations between the U.S. and Canada were to fall off, I mean, what would that mean for, not just for the U.S., frankly, what would that mean for Canada, too? Not that you're a Canadian national security expert, but...
Yeah, well, I mean, we have had a tremendous relationship with Canada, worked very, very closely with Canada on North American aerospace defense going back to the early days of the Cold War,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are U.S. assets in Canada and up in Alaska that provide early warning for missile attack from the old Soviet Union or Russia today.
Right.
And in fact, Canada is right now in the process of upgrading their own aerospace defense. They just bought an over-the-horizon radar system, not from the United States, but from Australia, which is, you know, a radar system that should really help with, like, detecting hypersonic missile attacks that would be coming in from the north, either against Canada or against the United States. But that's part of that North American aerospace defense, right?
Sure. NORAD.
NORAD,
right.
That we've had for decades, many, many decades.
Yep.
Canada is upgrading, you know, their military. They were going to buy the F-35, which is a U.S.-made combat jet, right? One of the best in the world. But it looks like they might be pulling out of that deal to look for something else instead of backing American defense suppliers. So there's a lot of things that all of a sudden in the last 60 days have fundamentally changed in Canada's outlook as far as looking at America as a reliable partner in international defense.
Yeah.
So,
you know, one of the things that I learned from listening to national security this week is that economic growth is national security.
It is. Yep.
And I don't know what percentage of you know, the GDP comes from trade with Canada, right? But I do know, having worked in the construction industry for many, many years, we get a lot of our raw materials, timber and steel, from Canada. I mean, a 25% tariff or higher on that stuff, I mean, I don't think it would cripple the U.S. economy. And we are looking, obviously, at the what they're now calling the Trump session, right? But I mean, I'm flabbergasted, John, by all of this, because it's so ridiculous and so unnecessary. But I mean, economically, I mean, what's going on? I mean, come on.
Yeah, you're not going to get a whole lot of debate from me on whether or not it's a good idea. So I would tell you that. So I looked up very quickly while you were chatting.
Yep.
What some of the state trade statistics are. And in the first three quarters of 2024, we had about $600 billion of goods going back and forth across the U.S.-Canada border.
Right.
I mean, that's huge. And in fact, there is an estimate that the value last year alone of trade with Canada reached about $1 trillion in trade.
Yeah.
That's huge.
It's huge.
Yeah.
It's huge. Yeah. Okay. There are, I guess, national security concerns with along the border between U.S. and Canada. Can you speak to that at all?
So I think, you know, the biggest issue there is the fentanyl crisis, as it's been framed by the Trump administration. Mm-hmm. And it's like 0.03% or 0.3% or something like that. I remember seeing this in the news. I think it's like 0.3% of the entire volume of fentanyl trade being smuggled across into the United States comes from Canada. The rest is coming in either by sea or by land across the U.S.-Mexico border.
Right.
So it's a minor issue, really, with Canada. And yet the president has framed it as an equal threat coming across the Canadian border as coming across with the Mexican border. So that's sort of a falsehood, right, being pushed by the administration. As far as, you know, looking at everything, I mean, when you frame everything as a national security threat, it sort of gives you the power to do sweeping changes and militarizing the United States. Rather than looking at the drug issue as one of addiction and organized crime, right? Which is where we, which is what most administrations have always considered it to be.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the issue really is one more between the U.S. and Mexico than between U.S. and Canada. And that is the statements coming out of the administration about Canada being a main source of fentanyl smuggling into the United States, causing the deaths of, you know, tens of thousands of Americans. That is the kind of thing that really angers the Canadians, because they know with absolute certainty that that is a flat out lie.
Yeah. We, you know, most Americans, I think, know that it's a flat out lie. I mean, we don't hear a whole lot about Canadian drug cartels, right?
Mm-mm.
You don't hear a whole lot about tunnels burrowed underneath the border that you know, pop up in Minot, North Dakota.
Right.
Right.
Now, there is some human smuggling that goes on. In fact, I'm sure you recall the case of the Indian family, you know, from
yes.
the nation of India that was abandoned on yes. the U.S.-Canada border in the middle of that horrific blizzard a couple of winters ago.
Froze to
and
death.
They died. Yeah. They died. So you do have some human smuggling operations that are taking place, but it's a drop in the bucket compared to what happens across the southern border.
Yeah, I'm no fan of the current administration, and I've made no secret about that. But of all the things, that are going on that really bother me, this issue with Canada might be the one that bugs me the most. Sort of shifting a little bit to the east, then Greenland and this whole thing. I do know that there could be national security interests for the United States to have Greenland be part of the country, but I can't tell you what they are. Can you maybe talk about that a little bit?
Sure. So if you think about the fact that that Greenland is actually, it's a Danish territory, right?
Yeah.
It's part of the Danish kingdom. It's pretty much got a heck of a lot of autonomy now as a province,
right?
Danish kingdom. But the reason why Greenland has been so important to U.S. national security interests and really to the NATO alliance is that for the Soviet Navy coming out of the high north, right?
Yep.
Sending their submarines out into the ocean, you know, into the Barents Sea and then through the Norwegian Sea and into the North Atlantic, they have to pass through what's called the Greenland-Iceland-UK gap, as in United Kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
And that stretch of water through there, the GIUK gap, is a strategic choke point. And the U.S. Navy, the Royal Navy, our other allies in the NATO alliance, used to patrol that area to try and pick up on any Soviet submarine movements heading down into the Atlantic, certainly paying attention to any Soviet surface ships that were sailing through that region. And I can't go into the details of why that's especially there is so critical, but trust me, it is.
Okay.
And Denmark, being, you know, one of our NATO allies, mm-hmm. Happily allowed the United States to put basing up in certain areas of Greenland to help with U.S. and NATO security. And we have U.S. personnel on Greenland today. And Denmark would happily agree for America to invest cash into expanding bases up there because it brings revenue to the 60,000 or so people who live on the island of Greenland. And Greenland, I mean, it is an enormous piece of territory.
Yeah,
it's absolutely. But it's also covered in some areas, I don't know, at least a mile, maybe 2 miles deep of ice.
Right.
So it's there's a heck of a lot of fresh water that's on Greenland as well.
Oh.
So here's the other challenge. If you think about the Arctic Ocean, that generally has been freezing over completely winter after winter, but that trend line is going down. And there are some scientists, climate scientists, who are now estimating that the Arctic Ocean might be ice-free as early as 2030, 2031, which is a heck of a lot sooner than they were estimating just a decade ago, right? Yep. I mean, they were thinking, oh, maybe by 2050 or beyond, we might, it might happen much, much sooner. So the Northern Passage, the one that runs kind of along the Russian territorial seas between the Pacific and the Atlantic through the Arctic Ocean, that's already open and open for business usually by midsummer and into the early to mid fall. But it's the shipping lanes have been becoming more and more apparent. Now, the Northwest Passage, that I'm sure you've heard that term be used many times, where it would cut through the Labrador Sea, through Baffin Bay, and then, you know, through Nunavut territory over through the Beaufort Sea and then into the Northern Pacific. That would speed transit of goods between the U.S. East Coast and the Western Pacific ports in Japan, Korea, and China.
Oh.
So that hasn't really opened yet, but climate change is almost for sure going to open those passageways. And Greenland sits astride both of those passageways, right?
Yep.
I mean, it's a key strategic location for choke points along both those maritime shipping routes. Now, the other thing is, and this is one of those big things, there's an estimate. I mean, it's an estimate, right? You don't know exactly how much there is, but there's obviously critical minerals, rare earths, and whatnot that probably reside in Greenland. In areas where the ice is receding, you could potentially go in and do resource extraction. The challenge you run into is that Greenland, as an Arctic climate, has a very fragile ecosystem. And the way we do mining around the world today for some things like copper and nickel leaves behind a weak acid discharge. That's not going to be good for any wet environment, right? It just goes everywhere, that stuff. So, and the people in Greenland, you know, in this semi-autonomous province, have basically recoiled at the threats that the Trump administration has made about Greenland becoming part of the United States. They would like autonomy, they'd like independence, but they want their own country.
Yeah.
And I think we do a hell of a lot more in offering a carrot rather than threatening with a stick, because these are NATO allies. They are fellow democracies, representative democracies. Making threats against your fellow representative democracies usually does not turn out well.
Yeah, no, and well, but you know, let's trust the president, because I mean, he wrote the book, man, The Art of the Deal. He knows what he's doing.
Well, yeah, we'll see.
Okay. All right. Hey, John, I really appreciate this, and
you bet.
We will talk to you again next week.
All right. Have a great one.